From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Peter Biello, in for Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The U.S. Postal Service is facing a perfect storm right now. A new postmaster general, political turmoil about absentee voting, an unprecedented number of mail-in ballots, and, of course, the COVID-19 pandemic. In New Hampshire, clerks recently expressed concern that local mail was being routed through central processing centers in White River Junction in Manchester, even if it was sent from one address to another within the same community. Now, Deputy Secretary of State Dave Scanlon says election mail will be a priority leading up to November 3rd. Today on The Exchange, the state of the U.S. Postal Service. What questions do you have about the USPS functions? What have your experiences with the USPS been like this year? Our email address, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call to tell your story. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. And our guests today, Mariam Jamil, engagement reporter at ProPublica, and Jacob Bogage, business reporter at The Washington Post. Thanks to both of you for being on the program today.
Hi, good to be here.
Thanks for having me.
So the U.S. Postal Service is struggling with a bunch of issues right now. Mariam, how much of what the USPS is dealing with right now is new, and how much of it has been part of a longstanding problem?
Yeah, a lot of this is a continuation of a longstanding problem. The Postal Service has had a shortage of employees for quite a while, which is why we have been seeing some of the delays in mail delivery. The Postal Service has been having some financial struggles for a while, which bleeds into their ability to hire people. But some of these issues are new. So they have recently had a significant dip in their on-time mail delivery. Coronavirus is new this year, and that's part of what's adding to the shortage of workers that wasn't a factor before. So you have people who have to take time out because they get sick themselves. You have people who have to take time out because they have a health condition leading them to quarantine, or they have family members with a health condition. They have to take time off for children who need care. So there are quite a few new factors in the mix as well. And then, of course, we have our surge of mail-in ballots adding to the mail volume.
And to what extent is the worker shortage a function of the economy? And to what extent is it a function of leadership?
There are, if both of those factors are at play, there are choices that USPS can make, of course, about how they choose to spend their money, what perks they choose to give their employees. And of course, the Postal Service is competing with employers like Amazon, and until recently, unemployment was quite high, unemployment was quite low, which made the Postal Service have to try to be even more competitive to get workers in. That being said, the Postal Service is a fairly dangerous place to work. People frequently get injuries. It can be there. Postal workers speak quite regularly of intimidation surrounding taking sick time off.
Meaning managers are discouraging taking sick time because they're so shorthanded?
Yes, that's something that postal workers very widely report, especially before the coronavirus, when management's rules around sick time loosened up. So there are definitely ways that the Postal Service could make a different set of choices to prioritize workers and make it a more desirable place to work, though it's also dealing with a set of circumstances that make it hard to hire a lot of people.
And Jacob, what about from your perspective? We mentioned a variety of issues that the USPS is facing right now. What of it is new, and what's perhaps a longstanding issue?
Yeah, I think Mariam did a really wonderful job kind of summarizing the state of play where we are right now in terms of what's new and what is not. I would add one more thing, which is package volume. Since the pandemic started, one of the Postal Service's big concerns was we're seeing this precipitous drop off in first class mail. You know, those are letter size mail, things that come in an envelope, your bills, your greeting cards from your aunt, and then from marketing mail, which are, you know, advertisements and the coupons from Bed Bath & Beyond that are stacked up on my counter. And we've seen, those are the things that, that help the Postal Service make the most money. We've seen a big drop off in those, but the Postal Service's finances have been propped up by these package volumes because we're all shopping online for things we don't want to go have to buy at the grocery store, for toilet paper and for dog treats and for things to entertain us during the pandemic. And now that we're getting into holiday season, those, you know, package volumes are still up because people are looking for Christmas presents and things like that. So we're talking about different types of mail products, but it's all in one mail stream. And the Postal Service was not built to handle this kind of package volume. It was built to handle a lot of paper rather than boxes. Mm-hmm. And so that's another challenge that they're facing. It's great for their finances. It's keeping them in a more stable position, but it's also materials that they're not necessarily used to having to work with at this level.
Well, let me ask you, Jacob Bogage, because you've done a lot of great reporting on this for The Washington Post, and that's the way the USPS measures success in the speed of delivery. And there's a number that they use to determine how much mail is delivered on time. Where's that number now, and where is it supposed to be according to the USPS?
So this is what I've spent, you know, my last week obsessing over. So thank you for the question. The Postal Service's internal goal for first-class mail delivery, which is in 1 to 3 days, is 96%. We want to have 96% of our mail delivered on time in that window.
And can I pause you for a moment, Jacob? Because I know people might be thinking, would a mailed ballot be included in that first class delivery, or is that something entirely separate?
Yes, the Postal Service has been ordered by the courts to treat ballots like they are first class mail.
Okay, forgive me for interrupting. Please continue.
No, not at all. Not at all. So, the line that we shoot for is 96%. The Postal Service never, under ideal circumstances, never hits 96%. They're normally somewhere between 91 and 94. When the pandemic hit, they were at consistently 90-91%. When the Postmaster General Louis DeJoy takes office, they're still at 90-91%, even though we're in the middle of the pandemic. And then Louis DeJoy's cost-cutting agenda takes shape. And that goes into effect on July 10th. The very next week, we see this precipitous drop in on-time performance. Over the next 5 weeks, 7% of the nation's first-class mail is delayed, and we still haven't rebounded. Our on-time rate right now is 86%. I like to think about that in real-world terms, right? If we're at 90%, that means if I sent 100 letters, 90 of them would arrive on time, 10 would not, right? If we're at 86%, that means 14 of those letters would not arrive on time. So there is every time we see a drop in service, it's not some abstract number. That's a real number of things that aren't arriving on time.
And if you're talking about ballots in a close race, that might really make a difference.
Specifically in states where we have tight deadlines. You think about Michigan, Wisconsin, Georgia. These are what we call in-hand states. The ballot has to be in the election official's hand by the close of polls on election night. So a postmark doesn't really matter. Where in a state like Pennsylvania, it might, or in a state like North Carolina, where I believe they have up to, I think it's 3 to 5 days, I forget offhand, in North Carolina for your ballot to come in after election day, if it's postmarked from before election day. When we're dealing with these tight deadlines in states that could be decided by tight margins, that's where the on-time rate really, really matters.
Listeners, if you have a question about the USPS, about absentee ballot mailing, or anything else with respect to the USPS, give us a call now. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. You can also email your question, your comment, your story. Our address is exchange@nhpr.org. And let's take a call from Steve in Nottingham. Steve, thank you very much for calling. What's on your mind?
Good morning. I'm on the way to the post office, so it's perfect. I did a test in Nottingham where I checked a absentee ballot that was mailed at the Nottingham post office and could verify that the day it was mailed and postmarked, it was also delivered to the town hall the same day. So I was really pleased to know that it didn't go to Manchester and that the local ballot stayed local.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. A sample of one, Steve's experience. We'll start with you, Jacob. To what extent do you think Steve's experience is representative, or is that too hard to say at this point?
A sample. Well, first of all, Steve, thank you for voting. I think it's a little bit too hard to say, especially with the sample of one. Talking with postal workers, including postal workers in New Hampshire, the policy kind of varies by location as to when supervisors are telling clerks, hey, we need to cull our ballots locally so we don't have to send them off to Manchester to get sorted. If you see a ballot, pull it out here, let's sort it here, and we'll take it to town hall ourselves. I've had a lot of postal workers all over the country, but including in New Hampshire, tell me that it is variable whether or not they're allowed to do that or they're being encouraged to do that.
And Mariam, do you want to weigh in?
Yeah, no, that sounds just about right. It's interesting looking at the people who write into us about their cases and trying to gauge to what extent it's representative. I mean, USPS estimates about that about 64 million ballots have made their way to people or to the election offices, their final destination. That being said, I myself had my ballot get lost in the mail, apparently.
Really?
It's been about 20 days and it still has not come. And we do hear people writing into us with both stories of success and stories like mine. And we know many of these ballots are making their way. But like Jacob said, we have our on-time delivery rates, meaning that, 10 to 20 out of 100, depending where you are, pieces of first-class mail might not make it on time. So that it also gives us a bit of a picture of how things might be going.
Mm-hmm. What have you heard from postal workers, Mariam, with respect to the urgency they feel about making sure these absentee ballots, if they're mailed, get to their destination on time?
Across the board, I hear that postal workers are really, really prioritizing these ballots as much as they can. I mean, it's a bit tough for them because they have multiple things that they have to accomplish. Getting ballots delivered and processed are one of those things. They also have priority mail, which are a big, those are packages that are a priority for USPS because they usually have deadlines associated with them, or they always have deadlines associated with them. I think postal workers, the ones that I've spoken to, which are many, view this as a huge responsibility and are doing everything they can to push these ballots to their final destinations. But it's not always entirely up to them.
I was just going to ask, is that prioritization a matter of policy or is a matter of these individual workers feeling a civic duty to their fellow citizens to get this ballot to its destination on time?
It's a combination. So ballot mail is marked differently. There are colorful tags on ballot mail to help postal workers process them and to also make them stand out and make sure they're not getting in boxes where they shouldn't be. The Postal Service has worked with unions to make sure that there are postal workers and management who are assigned specifically to just monitoring facilities to look out for ballot mail to make sure that it's being pushed along. So that's all a matter of policy. And then there's also individual work ethic and dedication that is pushing people to really do their best.
We get this note from Sandy on Facebook who wrote to say, in Nashua, I've found the attitudes of USPS employees to be upbeat and professional over the past few weeks. In fact, 3 weeks ago, my doorbell rang. It was my USPS carrier to personally hand me my absentee ballot. He smiled and said he just wanted to make sure I received it. That small gesture upped my confidence in the USPS exponentially. That's a comment from Sandy on Facebook. Mariam, is that a familiar story to you? Have you heard stories like that as well?
Yes, I have. I think also right now people are trying to keep their distance because of coronavirus. So if your postal worker doesn't personally hand you a piece of mail, that doesn't mean that they wouldn't like to. But I do hear quite a few stories of people going out of their way to make sure that they're there to get those ballots to people. I spoke with a worker who got coronavirus, she believes, through exposure at work. And one of the things she was concerned with, she's a mail handler who works on a machine that sorts mail by zip code. One of the things she was really concerned with as far as getting back to work, which was pretty amazing for me to hear because she's literally sick, like she was very weak. She was like, I want to get back to work because I know the machine that I work on is one that will be processing ballots. And I don't know that USPS, she said most likely USPS would not be replacing her with another worker because that's not what her facility has been doing. So she felt a great sense of urgency.
We get this email from Pam who wrote, I had a bad experience at the Wilton post office. The shielding for the counter is not located where the public interacts with personnel, and the postal counter person was not wearing a mask. I asked her about not wearing a mask, and she said she can't breathe with one, and they fog her glasses. I only go to pick up my mail now from my P.O. box and use copious amounts of sanitizer afterwards. If I need to use counter service, I drive to another town's post office that has protections in place. Why is there no standardization of COVID policies? That's the question from Pam. Mariam, do you have an answer for that?
That's an excellent question. And that's been something that has been a problem for many postal workers and management as well. There is not really great consistent enforcement of coronavirus protections. As to why, I think to USPS's credit, they have more than 31,000 retail post offices, and it can be hard to get the thousands of people involved in making this work to each get on board with all wearing a mask, with all having those types of protections and screens in place, even if they do have a policy. I can empathize with that being a significant challenge. That being, because you're relying on a lot of people to carry this out. That being said, she's identified a major issue. And if those protections were more stringent and more consistent, I think we might see fewer postal workers and maybe even others who come in contact with the post office getting sick, or at least fewer who are at risk. And I also want to note that as of yesterday, USPS's count of employees who have tested positive for coronavirus since the beginning of this was at 12,899. And that is, of course, an undercount because it's not counting people who never got tested.
Let's turn now to Scott LaSalle. He's branch president for National Postal Mail Handlers Union in White River Junction, Vermont. Scott, thank you for being on the program.
Thank you for having me.
So you've been listening to our conversation. What are your insights into the state of the USPS and its ability to handle all these absentee ballots coming through?
Well, like it's been mentioned, the ballots are a priority for us. We have teams that sweep through the building each day just to identify and try to make sure that the ballots are being moved through. Same thing at night and in the morning. Most of the places like Manchester, White River, run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all year long. So we've got a constant flow of mail coming through at all times. But the ballots are definitely our number one priority. It's brought up every day. There's meetings on it to make sure that certain areas have been checked to make sure that this is moving, and most importantly, that they're postmarked correctly.
Mm-hmm. And to what extent are you hampered by an employee or a workforce shortage?
We are pretty much understaffed at the moment. Nationally, the Postal Service and the mail handlers have agreed to able to hire more people than what's contractually obligated. So we are allowed to hire more people, but we're not having people come knocking on the door saying we want to work. So our biggest problem right now is White River is understaffed by about 10 to 15 mail handlers and probably about the same of clerks.
Mm-hmm. And so What about the rates? We've talked about the rates of first-class mail delivery being on time. What can you tell us about how good those rates are for you?
The rates are okay. Like they mentioned earlier, they have dropped a little bit because of the processing that's coming through. White River is kind of a conduit for everything coming through. All the mail coming into New England, all the priority mail goes to Nashua. All the standard mail goes to Springfield, and they process that and get it out to the rest of the country and back to us. So we process it as soon as it comes in. We push it through, and at that point, we try to make sure the building's empty every morning. So
if you're in possession of ballots on the morning of November 3rd, your plan is to throw every resource available to get those to the final destination by the close of business on that day, 5 o'clock.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Scott LaSalle, branch president for the National Postal Mail Handlers Union in White River Junction, Vermont, thank you very much for being on the program today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll speak more with Jacob and Mariam about the USPS, and we'll talk to Janice Kelby, too. She's the legislative director for the New Hampshire American Postal Workers Union. If you have questions about mail delivery ahead of the election, give us a call now, 1-800-892-6477. You can also email us. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. I'm Peter Biello, in for Laura Kanoi today, and we'll be right back.
Chances are, you're working from home a lot more these days. Hi, I'm Sam Evans Brown, host of Outside In, and if you're like me, you're driving much less. And perhaps you're wondering what to do with that old vehicle you no longer need. Well, you can donate it to NHPR and turn those many miles into shows that you love, like Morning Edition, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and Outside In. We'll take care of the paperwork and arrange to have it picked up for free at nhpr.org/car donation.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today, we're talking about the U.S. Postal Service. Listeners, do you have concerns about delivery of your absentee ballot? Send us an email. The address is exchange@nhpr.org or call in. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Our guests for the full hour today, Mariam Jamil, engagement reporter at ProPublica, and Jacob Bogage, business reporter at The Washington Post. We got this email from a listener who says, I've used the mail for both the primary and the general elections with some trepidation, but I use the Secretary of State's ballot checker to ease my mind, and I find it very useful. Thanks for that listener for providing their insight. And just a reminder, too, that you can always check out NHPR's voter guide at nhpr.org if you have questions. That's a resource that's being constantly updated for you as information changes. And joining us now is Janice Kelby. She's the legislative director for the New Hampshire American Postal Workers Union. Janice, thank you for being here today.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Janice, what are you hearing from postal workers? How are they doing? What are their concerns?
Postal workers have always had delivering the mail as a priority. From day one, when you come into the Postal Service and you receive training, the biggest thing you learn is that you go out of your way at all times to not delay the delivery of the mail. And when all of these new instructions came down to change things, postal workers were upset about it. And the word got out pretty quickly that there were delays that were happening that were not necessary. And thankfully, because of oversight, a lot of those rule changes and procedural changes were turned back. And everything I'm hearing is good now. Because there has been light shined on this whole problem, they put extra attention on it. They have people in the plants that are meeting together to identify any problems with processing ballots. And we're going to do it. We're going to get the mail delivered, and delivering ballots is a super priority to all postal workers.
And those changes that you're referring to, Janice, I believe are those made by the new Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy. They include stricter transportation timelines, cuts to overtime, decreasing the number of mail sorting machines. Janice, do you know anything about the four mail sorting machines that were taken out of commission in Manchester in August? Is that true? And have they been reassembled, reinstalled, to your knowledge?
It is true, and nothing was reassembled. They had a problem, I know, on one night in the past that where they, without, they took out one of two machines that did that particular task, and they were shorthanded and had to process mail by hand when one machine, the one remaining machine, went down. But they have changed. The bigger changes that were having an impact in Manchester at the time were changes where they would send the mail out, even if there was mail for one town that was 5 minutes from being ready. The changes that DeJoy had started meant that they would go ahead and send the truck out and that remaining mail would just wait till the next day. That's no longer the case. They either hold the truck up if it's a small amount of time, or they make arrangements for alternative delivery to get that mail out and get it to its destination as quickly as possible.
Janice, earlier in the program, we were talking about on-time delivery rates for first-class mail. The USPS always shoots for, but never quite gets the 96% on-time delivery rate. Has the removal of these four mail sorting machines in Manchester made a direct and noticeable impact to the rate of on-time first-class mail delivery in parts of New Hampshire?
My understanding is that it has drastically improved. I think that there's still some problems with package mail, but I think a huge emphasis has been put on delivering, making sure that letter mail and ballot mail is still a top priority and gets delivered on time. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of my bigger concerns are, I'm absolutely confident that we're going to be able to handle every bit of the selection mail and do it on time. My concern is that all of these halts to the destruction of the Postal Service have basically been put on hold until after November 3rd. My nightmare is waking up on November 4th and finding out that they're going to move forward and move forward quickly with trying to tear down the Postal Service. But as far as getting the ballots delivered, I'm sure that it's going to happen and it's going to happen on time. We're really going out of our way now to make sure that that happens.
Yeah, and some folks on social media have said, you know, we shouldn't mail anything if we don't absolutely have to until after Election Day, because that would allow the USPS to focus its efforts on ballots, getting the ballots delivered before or on Election Day. Is that a practical strategy? Do you think this would actually help?
No.
Okay.
I mean, honestly, in the big picture of things, the amount of mail that we process on a daily basis, I think it was estimated that even with a high volume of turnout of absentee ballots going through the mail, that if you took all of that mail and processed it all on one day, that it would take that one day for postal workers to work all of the election mail. The volume of mail, I mean, I don't think a lot of people really realize how big the Postal Service is. I mean, we have over 600,000 employees throughout the country, and the USPS generates on average $236 million in a day. They process and deliver 472.1 million pieces of mail in a day. So election mail is big, there's no denying it, but we can handle it as long as obstacles aren't put in the way. And apparently those obstacles have been at least temporarily removed until the election.
So Janice Kelby, what would you like to see from the state or maybe the federal government to make the job of the USPS ahead of Election Day easier?
Just get out of the way and let the postal employees deliver the mail and the ballots like they always have. We've always put priority on election mail, and unless we're forced to do anything differently. That's exactly what postal workers expect to do when they go to work.
That's Janice Kelby, Legislative Director for the New Hampshire American Postal Workers Union. Janice, thank you for sharing your insights today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And listeners, now's the time to voice your questions or your comments, especially over the leadership of the Postal Service. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR, or email us. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. Jacob, I'd like to turn to you briefly, Jacob Bogage of The Washington Post, because you've reported on some issues of ballots being discarded. So what's happening there exactly? Is that as big a problem as maybe a passive consumer of news might perceive it to be?
No, it is not. When we've talked about these cases of ballots being discarded, it is frequently because the president or members of his administration like to talk about this issue. And so we've heard about ballots ending up in a ditch in Pennsylvania or in a river in Wisconsin. These are very isolated cases. And they're often, you know, not necessarily issues with the Postal Service. They're issues with local election officials who are trying to figure out the best way to handle and process a volume of mail-in ballots that they have not before. But again, these are isolated issues. And there really is no evidence of significant voter fraud in any American election, let alone that voting at home or voting remotely increases the possibility of voting fraud.
Mm-hmm. Let's turn that to Mariam, because that's one example of misinformation. Thank you, Jacob, for that correction. Mariam, do you know of some other inaccuracies about the USPS that you've heard that you'd like this opportunity to correct?
I think there are quite a few. It's really hard to keep track of the Postal Service right now, and there are so many different locations and workers and parties that are in the mix right now that I think every day there is like good information coming out that's true to one place that's maybe not true in another city. So I think one important thing is to just when one hears a story to kind of read the context a little bit and make sure that that you're recognizing where that happened and who it pertained to. And like Jacob said, some of these stories that are important and alarming about ballots getting, you know, tossed aside, those are very much a minority and very specific instances. I think that's one thing that just applies to a lot of the information that we're hearing about the Postal Service in general.
Let me relay this question from Josh, and we'll put it to you first, Jacob. The question is, what if my mailman is a Trump supporter and he pulls my ballot out for sorting but sees my Biden sign on my lawn and he throws it away? How do we make sure that won't happen? Let's just acknowledge off the bat that the parties could be reversed in that scenario and the concern would remain the same. What do you think, Jacob?
So, gosh, that's an interesting question.
Essentially, how do you stop fraud at the carrier level?
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to acknowledge that the sheer volume of pieces of mail that mail carriers deal with, I don't know that anyone has the time or wherewithal to really comb through their satchel and see if, you know, your ballot corresponds with someone who has a Biden or a Trump sign in their yard. The other thing is that mail carriers and postal workers swear an oath of office. You know, they'd be criminally liable for doing something like that. So there are penalties and ways to hold folks accountable, though you hope and presume that their moral and ethical compass would keep them from doing something like that. If you really are that concerned about petty partisan animus getting in the way of your mail being delivered, then there are other ways to vote. You can drop your ballot off in a mailbox. You could drop it off in a public collection box yourself. Mm-hmm. You could put it in a ballot drop box. You could bring it to a voting precinct.
In New Hampshire, you can go to your town hall.
Right, you can go to your town hall. You could vote early in person. You could vote in person on election day. There are a number of ways to vote that if you have an issue trusting the Postal Service, either because of the efficacy of on-time delivery or another reason, that there are other ways to make you feel more secure in your ballot delivery. We're in heated political times, and I can understand this listener's concern, but in no way do I think it's representative of the 630,000 men and women who work for the Postal Service, who take an oath of office, who treat, in a perfect world, our mail like they would want their mail treated. They know what they're having some trouble, obviously, because we're having this conversation, but they do know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. We get this email from Sarah who wrote, "I've lived in Keene for a few years. I have only great things to share regarding our postal service. The majority of my packages and letters arrive on or before schedule, even during the pandemic." Sarah writes, "I am grateful for our state's USPS staff." And we also got an email from Sharon who writes, "I work for an agency that receives a lot of certified mail from the public. USPS tells people that we have received their mail without verifying it with us. For months, nobody who works in my office has been given the opportunity to sign for mail. I believe the USPS should be fully funded as a federal government service. Mail delivery does seem slower and less consistent." That's from Sharon. And Jacob, I'll turn this to you because you've reported that some postal workers have been falsifying data delivery on packages in part to make the arrival on time statistics look better. To what extent is that a pervasive problem?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is a problem that we know has been going on for years, that the Postal Service's Inspector General has issued numerous reports about, telling the top brass at the Postal Service that these delivery statistics are being falsified on a significant basis. You know, it's hard to get nationwide statistics for how pervasive this issue is, because packages are a competitive product for the Postal Service, and they don't release that data publicly the same way they do release data on paper mail, where they do have a monopoly. But what I can tell you is, you know, we looked at one district in Florida, the Suncoast District. On one day, the Postal Service's internal system flagged 10% of their packages for having suspicious scans. Now, a lot of those, you know, when you look at them closer, are not suspicious. You know, they're a bunch of packages being scanned into a package locker, or, you know, being scanned as someone picks them up at the Postal Service. But there are a number that, you know, a package is marked a failure at 8 p.m. when a supervisor is scanning 20 packages in a row within the span of 1 minute at 7:45 p.m. You know, attempted delivery, attempted delivery, attempted delivery, attempted delivery. You kind of know something is up. And that has been flagged to supervisors at the Postal Service for years now, and there's really nothing been done about it.
But it's not a new problem.
No, it's not a new problem, but it's a problem that, based on the data, has gotten worse during the pandemic just because of the massive influx of packages. But this is something, because it's linked to compensation,
linked to compensation for managers and postal workers, or just, you know,
for management.
Okay.
Because it is linked to compensation, because the Postal Service has to compete so intensely with private carriers like FedEx and UPS and Amazon, but also because it needs the business from FedEx and UPS and Amazon. Mm-hmm. They're in this position where it is very hard for the Postal Service to stomach a package failure, because that is one more reason why when FedEx and UPS and Amazon go to the bargaining table to negotiate rates with the Postal Service, they can argue for a lower rate. And it's one more reason why a customer might choose to send their package via another service rather than the Postal Service. And so it hits at the Postal Service at so many angles and so many pressure points that it's been very hard for management to fully root out this problem and, frankly, to acknowledge the problem.
And Mariam Jamil of ProPublica, have Jacob's comments resonated with you? Do they make sense?
Yes, I haven't been reporting on that specific issue as Jacob has, so I am really pleased to hear his insight. Another side of what's happening that I have been reporting on is the toll that this takes on the employees. So that pressure to really deliver and get to so many destinations. Each worker has a different route, and each route is calculated based on an amount of time that they're expected to be able to complete their day and get to each place within. But if you look at the injury statistics at the Postal Service, it's clear that a lot of things are happening to postal workers, sometimes as a result of time crunch pressures and, of course, of other things, but it's quite astounding. So the Postal Service makes up about 20% of federal employees, but they make up about 50% of the workplace injuries that are registered with the Department of Labor.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's such a physical job, right? In addition to working with machinery, they're walking around all the time. And in New England, it can be pretty icy on the sidewalk sometimes, you know?
Indeed, there's so many opportunities to get hurt. And every worker's route will vary quite a bit. But I've talked to so many people who describe the number of places that they have to get to and the way that it sometimes feels almost physically impossible to do what they're supposed to do in a way that is both timely and safe, where they're not putting extra pressure on their bodies, and it really wears people down. So I just wanted to highlight that aspect of the crunch to get these packages to where they need to go and those letters.
Thank you for that. We get an email from Laura who says, I volunteered in Jaffrey during the primary, and a mail carrier came and brought us ballots that had been mailed that day. He knew they needed to be delivered by 5 o'clock, and he went out of his way to bring them to us. The post office is very close to the polling station, so I'm sure that had something to do with his diligence. I have nothing but good things to say about the post office and Jaffrey. They truly go out of their way to deliver the mail in a professional and kind way. That's the comment from Laura. Thank you very much. We're going to continue this conversation after a quick break, but we'd love to take more of your questions and comments if you have them. You can email us. The address is exchange@nhpr.org, or you can give us a call. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. I'm Peter Biello, and we'll be right back.
Fall cleanup projects around the house can be a lot of work, with leaves to rake, gutters to clean, and wood to stack. But donating that old vehicle you no longer use to NHPR is as easy as pumpkin pie. Free up some space in your garage this autumn, all while supporting the public radio programs you rely on. We'll take care of the paperwork and even arrange to tow away your old car, truck, or boat for free. Learn more today at nhpr.org/cardonation.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. In this hour, the U.S. Postal Service. Some are worried about the USPS's ability to process all of the ballots by Election Day, given staff shortages, and there are also concerns about the health and safety of postal workers. What questions or comments do you have? Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can comment on Facebook. Just search for NHPR Exchange on Facebook. Or give us a call right now. That's the quickest way to get your question asked and answered. Our number is 1-800- 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Our guests are Mariam Jamil, engagement reporter at ProPublica, and Jacob Bogage, business reporter at The Washington Post. And joining us now is Steve Doherty. He's the USPS regional spokesman. Steve, thank you for being on the program today.
Peter, thank you for having me on.
Steve, let's talk a little bit about working at the USPS in the time of this pandemic. We've heard some concerns from workers about protocols to keep people safe. What protocols have been instituted as a result of the coronavirus pandemic, and do they appear to be keeping workers safe and healthy?
They do, and we've followed all of the guidance from the Center for Disease Control and the World Health Organization. When you go to the post office, you're going to see things different than when if you went there last year at this time. You're going to see signs on the outer windows telling you the limit of number of people who can enter the lobby. You're going to see 6-foot spacing decals on the floor to keep people socially distant. When you get up to the counter, you're going to have probably something in front of it causing you to stand back 2 or 3 feet away. The payment terminal is going to be further away from the clerk. You're going to have the plexiglass barriers in place. All of our employees are provided with, the nitrile gloves and face masks and hand sanitizer. On the workroom floor, behind the scenes where you don't see the employees, you know, people who used to work side by side have been spaced out again to allow for social distancing where possible. On the administrative end, we do have a number of employees, if they're able to, that are working offsite, so they're not in the building. For letter carriers, things are different out on the street. If you have a package that you have to sign for before the letter carrier would hand you an electronic signature device, now they're going to just stand back a few feet, ask you for your first initial, your last name, and they'll enter the information for you. Then they can actually take a picture of the package to show that it was delivered at that address. There are a lot of different protocols in place, but basically we didn't design them. They're CDC recommendations and best practices that we try to follow to keep everybody as safe as possible while they're working on the front lines.
Yeah, and we got a note earlier from a listener who said that, you know, the post office in Wilton didn't follow guidelines that she thought should be followed, so she goes to a different one, which makes her feel safer. Now, would that be, is it up to the individual post office to put some of these in place, or are they mandated across the board? They all have to follow these, as you say, CDC guidelines.
Well, it's not the individual offices so much as the individual communities. Different towns, different jurisdictions have different regulations for mask requirements and things of that nature. And we encourage all of our employees to follow the local rules of the road. If your town requires that masks be worn in public, in public places, then you should be wearing them.
So there's no USPS policy across the board to have employees while they're on the clock wearing a mask?
No, there isn't. And other than to follow the local, masks are recommended, but it's more following the local jurisdictional guidelines.
I see.
You know, it stands to reason that a postmaster on Monhegan Island may not face the same, may not be as diligent as somebody who's working in Bangor or Portland. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just because of the spread and the local factors.
We get this note from David on Facebook who says, "Sometimes I wonder about their delivery tracking. We had a package that was supposedly put in the mailbox, but we didn't get it. I spoke to our usual carrier about that, and she checked and said the package was scanned early in the morning at the post office rather than in front of my mailbox." This seems to resonate with some reporting that Jacob Bogage has done at the Washington Post about pressures at the post office to scan packages that may not have been delivered to make the on-time delivery rates look better. To your knowledge, Steve Doherty, is this happening in your region?
Anecdotally, yes, I have heard stories of that, but it's not a policy where someone's being instructed to do that. To the contrary, the employees are being instructed because our customers can go online, and it's frustrating when someone calls the call center and says, "Hey, I got a package that's showing online that it's scanned delivered, and I'm standing at my front door and it's not here. What's going on?" They're supposed to scan the package when they deliver the package. That's the policy. That's what the employees are told. if someone is scanning them before they leave the office, it's more a time-saving shortcut on their part, which again is discouraged because it's passing false information off to our customers. But the packages should be delivered at should be scanned at the time that they're delivered.
Our new Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy, has made a number of changes in recent months. We've been talking about them on this program, among them stricter transportation timelines, cuts to overtime, decreasing the number of mail sorting machines. What is your response to these measures?
You know, anytime we've had a new Postmaster General, the Postmaster General comes in and will sit back and look at what's going on and then make some changes, put their own footprint on and try to fix what they see as the problems. And realistically, we have had problems. The Postal Service financially could be in better shape. So I think he made an assessment of changes that had to be made. Unfortunately, the timing of those, with the election coming up and the perception, it's difficult. He has made a full commitment to this year's election, and all of the equipment that's in place will stay in place. The collection boxes, all of the retail hours will stay as they are. And along with everyone else in the Postal Service, I think he is 100% committed to seeing that this election goes off successfully.
Are you suggesting that the changes Louis DeJoy has made would have been wise had it not been an election year? Because as folks have reported on the Washington Post, ProPublica, and elsewhere, the mail delivery rates, on-time delivery, have dropped. They dropped over the summer. I imagine that would be unacceptable to the USPS in any year, not just an election year.
Whenever you have changes of any kind, there's a learning curve, and it is typical to see some drop in service for the short term as things are changing, and that usually levels itself out. I'm not in a position to judge the changes that he's tried to make. I don't have that high a view of the organization to second guess the folks at headquarters, but I think just the timing of it made it more of an issue than it would have been if it weren't an election year, if it weren't just before an election.
Well, are you confident in the Postal Service's ability to deliver all of the ballots mailed on time?
Absolutely. As one of the other people had alluded to, we typically deliver I have a number here. Hold on. It's 433 million pieces of mail a day. So if every American were to vote by mail, that would be 330 million ballots, which is about two-thirds of what we typically handle in a day. Election mail is expected to be about 2%, less than 2% of the total mail volume we handle between September and Election Day. So we certainly have the capacity and the capability to handle that without a hitch.
That's Steve Doherty. He's the USPS regional spokesman. Thank you very much for being on the program today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We got this note from Sue on Facebook, who says, "I am a retired small town postmaster. Local employees must log all political mail and how many pieces were undeliverable, such as street addressed mail for P.O. Box customers. If that policy were relaxed, perhaps more workers would have time to cull ballots out of local mail. In any case, I recommend mailing ballots within the post office, not in the outside collection box, which can be cleared late in the day when there is no time to review what was deposited in the boxes." That's the comment from Sue on Facebook. And we are still with our guests, Mariam Jamil from ProPublica and Jacob Bogage, business reporter at The Washington Post. And I want to close the show today with a question about trust, because, you know, some have said that the real damage done here is the erosion of trust in the USPS. I mean, you could walk back all the changes that we've been talking about, the ones that have been made this summer that have reduced noticeably the delivery times. And as a result, public trust still harmed. But that could be an arguable point. To what extent is that true, Jacob?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is true. And I think I'll take it kind of a step further, if I could, which is, this is less, to me, a question of trust and more a question of what do we want the Postal Service to be? When we think about the Postal Service's finances or why it needs to save money, what we're really doing is making a value judgment on is having national mail delivery a public service, or is it a business? Is it something that can be run like a FedEx or a UPS or an Amazon, or is it something that as part of a democracy and free and open society that the government plays a role in? And every time that we see service scaled back, even if it's for perfectly legitimate reasons, like shoring up this agency's finances, which we all know have had problems, it begs the question, not just of the agency's leaders, but of the American people, mm-hmm. to make their voice heard about what do they want our nation's mail service to look like, and what services do they want it to offer.
And let me give Mariam a chance to respond. Mariam, we have about 30 seconds.
I think all of this, perhaps erosion of trust, is unfortunate in that we have less trust, but I think it's a good opportunity for us to take a proper look at the Postal Service, understand the opportunity that we have to understand it, to ask for improvements, like Jacob is saying, and hopefully have our voices heard in what is an agency that does a lot for the American people.
Mariam Jamil of ProPublica, thank you very much for being on the program today. Thank you also, Jacob. Jacob, we really appreciate you being on the program. Jacob Bogage, business reporter for the Washington Post. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio, produced today by Exchange fellow Jane Vaughn. Our theme music composed by Bob Lord. Engineer today is Dan Colgan. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for being here listening. And just remember that any voter concerned about COVID-19 can request an absentee ballot in this general election. In the past, absentee voting was limited to only people with certain state-approved excuses, but now anyone can do it, and officials are encouraging people to vote absentee to prevent the spread of COVID-19. For more information, check out NHPR's 2020 voting guide at nhpr.org. And thank you very much for listening today.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.